Hey everyone, welcome to Samuel Leeds Podcast. My name is Dr. Ryan Ryder, and on this episode, we are going to talk about big deals, property compliance, and work-life balance. Samuel, 2020, I feel it's freaking awesome to be sitting at you today. I've got some questions I want to ask you today. We've been friends for quite some time, and I feel really privileged to be sitting at you at the beginning of a new year. Finally, I want to pick your brain about what you're going to be focusing on in 2020. I know you recently posted a video on your focuses in 2020. So tell me a little bit about what you've been up to in Christmas now and what your big focuses in January and why January is a good month to be investing in property.
I think January is a brilliant month. I mean, Christmas time, this is how I played it over Christmas, and I even posted this out there. So everyone wants their house to sell before Christmas. All the estate agents say, well, it will be sold by Christmas. We're going to aim to do it by Christmas. Everyone's hoping it will be sold by Christmas. When it doesn't sell, you get pretty depressed. And then you become very motivated because the last thing you want to do is start being told, well, next Christmas. So what I did was just after Christmas on Boxing Day, I just looked through all the houses that were still available. And then there was one working day in between Christmas Day and the New Year. And on that one working day, when everyone else was like, oh, what day is it? What's going on?
Nice.
And all hung over and stuff. Yeah. I was just picking up the phone, booking shed loads of viewings. And now I've got a lot of deals in the bag going through. Not all necessarily for me, but there's just some really awesome stuff. So we've got some land in Stoke-on-Trent that we're looking to build on. Yeah. We've got quite a few lease option agreements for motivated sellers in negative equity.
Yeah.
Which I'm working on with some of my students. So I think I love that Christmas to New Year period. There's some people that are putting on their houses brand new in January. Like, oh, it's start of January, let's put the house up for sale. But the best people to go for are those people that didn't sell
in December.
In December that really needed to, because they've had the house on the market now for a few months. And you might think, well, why are they good houses to go for? Because if they haven't sold, they haven't sold for a reason. Maybe the houses suck. Mm. No, you're looking at it all wrong. Mm. You need to say, they haven't sold, they're going to be motivated, I'm going to get a really good deal. So that's kind of what I've been doing in January, really focusing hard on the property front. And it's just been a fabulous month so far.
Cool. I'm interested to ask you a little bit more about your preparation for December, because what's interesting about, we're sitting here now, it's January. I can feel the energy just in this, even in this interview, is that most people are kind of only getting, it's the beginning of January now. Most people have not even thought about the year, and you have not. I know your personal background is that you've rested in December. You went on a holiday.
I went on a holiday before Christmas.
Before Christmas, and now the period between Christmas and New Year, you're already doing property deals, already kind of in New Year phase. But what's quite interesting to talk to you about now is that because of your journey through property, you were able to go on a 2-week holiday in Thailand. You still earned money while you were away. And Albert Einstein said this, he said, genius happens in leisure time. So I'm actually quite interested to find out what thought flashes or what ideas you got while you were on holiday. Because I think as an entrepreneur myself, sometimes you get so caught in the business that you miss that thinking time. Yeah. So how was your holiday for you?
The holiday was great. I mean, we were in Thailand, and then after a few days, we just said, let's go to Singapore for a bit. So we spontaneously jumped on a flight and went to Singapore. We stayed at the Marina Bay Hotel, which is absolutely fabulous. We probably spent about £35,000, over that 2-week period. So we just really just let our hair down and had great fun. But you are right. When you go away, that is when you come up with the genius idea. So I've been working on a new book with some of my students, which has just been published and released on Amazon. We self-published it, which is called, I feel this sounds awful, but I've forgotten what it's called.
It's about compliance.
The title is that boring.
Yeah.
That I forgot what it's called, but it's something called Property. I think it's called Property Compliance Made Easy.
Yeah.
It's not the most exciting book. It's not like how to be financially free in 7 days. How to, buy low, rent high. But because everyone keeps saying to me, but what about compliance? But what about legislation? So for all those people interested in that side of things, that's why we wrote the book. I say we. I didn't want to write the book because I find that stuff boring. So I brought in some of my students. But to be honest, it's a fabulous book. Cool. And I think it's going to really serve a lot of people because there's so many people that are these compliant mentors that are teaching people about how to be compliant, and they're charging a fortune and they're wrapping people up in red tape, making it more complicated than it needs to be. So I wanted to just set the record straight alongside, I need to give a shout out to Anthony, Wilmot, Hannah Mills, James Armstrong. They really wrote the book. I just oversaw it, and it's great. So it's been fabulous. And I've also I published that video, but I published my business plan about my 2020 nice. Plan.
Now, listen, I think what's very interesting about how, because not being a details person myself, it's interesting how you said that that kind of world bores you. And actually, I think having been spent some time with you, I think one of your greatest successes is that you embrace a topic that I talk about in my coaching and mentoring, et cetera, and when I speak anyway, is the concept of sloppy success.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to ask you this.
Go on.
And what would you be, like, how do you balance the difference between sloppy success and making sure that you are okay? Because I know, you know, when we had a crash course, there's often a few people, especially left brain people, who are like, yes, but what about the compliance? And yes, but what about this? And yes, but what about that? I've heard you say many times, those are X, Y, and Z questions. Worry about A, B, and C. So how have you always balanced? Tell us about your first few property deals. I know a lot of people have been following you for a while, might have heard the story, but just the balance between going for something, sloppy success, and moving forward in the right direction, and then making sure you're compliant.
So as an entrepreneur, you're always looking for shortcuts. Mm. You're always looking to push the boundaries. So what you need is you need to be someone who has people who can guide you, who say, actually, that's illegal.
Got it.
Right? So if I'm always thinking of the reasons why something won't work, then that's called a pessimist. Mm-hmm. So as an entrepreneur, you need to be a problem solver, not a problem finder. Okay. But you do need to have people in your team who can be the pessimists, who can be the problem finders. They'll find a problem and then you'll say, well, what's the solution to that though? And then you're pushing and you'll find a... But for me, I'm always the person trying to push the boundaries, be creating things, being an entrepreneur, rather than someone that just... Because when people say, you know, oh, well, what about this? And yeah, but. I don't want to be a yeah, but person. I want to be someone who tells me why it can't be done. And then I say... There must be a way because, you know. So I think it's just about having. But at the same time, if you haven't got advisors, if you haven't got solicitors and people around you telling you when you're doing something a little bit too risky or a little bit too sloppy, then that's not good either. Mm. So the balance is be crazy, step out, take massive action, be dream like a kid, and take massive action like a. As if you cannot fail.
Mm. I think what's so important in property also to mention is that I had someone say this to me the other day. When you hardly ever hear this statement from anyone, I wish I'd never bought that property 10 years ago.
Oh no, never.
When have you ever heard anyone say that?
I've never heard it.
And never. I've never heard it either. And I think when it comes to property specifically, you know, fortune does favor the brave. In some way, shape, or form. So that balance between, and I think it's a nice topic because so many people, specifically in our crash courses, there's always that, yes, but what about compliance? And yes, but what about this? My lesson from it and my properties is that you'll never know everything when it comes to compliance. You'll never know everything when it comes to the rules and regulations, and that's why solicitors exist.
And if you did, then you'd be broke.
I know.
Because you'd just be a solicitor. Mm. So, yeah, 100%. And I think that I wrote the book or had the book written because I wanted to set the record straight because there's so much nonsense said around compliance because people just make up rules that aren't even there. Mm. Because the thing is, most people... Here's the thing, right? If someone said to me, hey, Samuel, can you teach me to do a podcast? And let's say I didn't want them to do a podcast because I saw them as competition. Yeah. I don't work like that, but let's say...
Yes.
My inclination would be to say, oh, wow, these cost a lot. These equipment, it's really hard. Takes a lot of practice. You can't, you know, you got to pay your guests. You got to, and I'm going to start saying stuff that might not even be true because I want to put them off in the exact same way. That's what people do in property. They say, you know, and they say, oh, it's really hard. There's compliance. And they make stuff up that's not even true. And the reason that they do it is either because they don't want you to do it because they are, they see you as a threat. Or because they don't want you to do it because they're trying to protect you. Mm. Guess what? My inclination as a multi-millionaire property investor and trainer and YouTube inspirer is I actually want people to do it. So I'm going to make it seem simple because it is simple, but also because complexity is the thief of execution. Mm. So that's where I'm coming from. So I wrote the book because I wanted to just say, look, this is everything there is about compliance.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think it's fantastic that you've done it. It's not kind of a love of yours, but you knew that the marketplace needed it. People needed it. People were asking for it, yes, in some way, shape, or form. Sometimes for certain personality types, that getting that information is the bridge to help them overcome that fear.
Yeah, and I don't want to.
So not everyone's like me and you.
I don't want to be stubborn. I don't want to say I'm not going to talk about it because you don't need to know it.
Yeah.
I'll talk about it. And in the book, we talk about literally compliance for tenants, how to be a landlord, how to be a deal sourcer, rent to rents, lease option agreements, accountants, accounting, how to save money on tax, like everything. All of these questions that normally I go, come on, dude, just pick up the phone and find a deal. All of these niggly questions around compliance and tax and laws and regulations are in the book.
Cool, awesome.
Listen, so everyone needs to get the book. I told you to read the book.
You did.
Today.
Of course. Well, here's the thing is even the properties, I'm the same boat as anyone who's gone for it in the beginning. There's so many properties that I've done where I have lied so heavily on my legal team and my team around me to do it. But, it, you know, getting that extra information, as I say, if it exists, and I know from someone who's in the game, it's an amazing piece of content that everyone should read.
And even if you only learn 3 or 4 new things in the book, I mean, it's worth it.
Listen, man, I always tell about a story about one of the properties that I rented. It was a commercial property. There was one sentence in the contract that cost us £35,000. One sentence.
What was the sentence?
The sentence was that it was a clause in the contract that said you sign the lease on the basis, and this was for a commercial property, on the basis that a change of use needed to happen. If you didn't get change of use, then the contract became null and void and you went your separate ways, but you paid a deposit in the meantime. So we paid $35,000 deposit for the place, and the clause in the contract was best endeavors. Okay, now there's been a famous court case. I think Sainsbury's or one of those big companies took another firm to court for it, and eventually someone won for the first time ever. And best endeavors is like how long is a piece of string? So, if for instance, let's say you signed the lease, and then the council come back and say, no, we're actually not going to give you planning permission to run this medical facility here. What that means is that you can now part ways with the landlord at the contract, and they should pay you back your deposit. However, if it's got the clause best endeavors in there, they may pick up on how long's a piece of string.
It's not saying we'll try.
We'll try, but they said, well, the contract said best endeavors, so we don't think you tried hard enough. Because you may have said you're going to get the contract back in 24 hours, and you only got it back in 48.
Yeah.
It's whatever they're... And they knew they had us over a barrel, and they kept our deposit.
Yeah.
So if you read the entire book for that, just that one or equivalent type of information,
I bet that you would never be caught out on that again.
Listen, it's my tuition. It's like my tuition to be able to teach it now.
Yeah.
Is that so? It's kind of like the price you have to pay.
Arnon said, either you'll pay for education or life will make you pay.
Either way, you're going to pay at some point.
Yeah.
So that was a $35,000 lesson for us. One sentence when it comes to compliance. Listen, man, I really wanted to talk to you a little bit about, you know, when you go down your property journey, you kind of got two paths. In the beginning, it's tick along with single lets. It's tick along with slightly deals that are going to... I know when I started my property journey, because I was doing relatively well in business, when I first started, the whole single let world was sometimes not as appealing as I got a bit blindsided by the fact that maybe the cash flow was quite low. And sometimes that stopped me from ticking along. And I'm just so interested to ask you a little bit more about, you did 29 property deals last year.
Yeah, or at least I was involved.
Involved in 29 property deals last year. And that is phenomenal by anybody's standards. But one of your big realizations or focuses on 2020 that I've had spoken to you a bit about is doing bigger deals.
Yeah.
I'll pre-frame this by saying I recently had dinner with a very successful entrepreneur, and he has a publicly listed company, turns over $250 million a year. And I said to him at dinner, you know, what are you doing at the moment? And he said to me, he's building a hotel and conference facility in Singapore. To which I followed up and said, wow, that must be so much work. And I'll never forget what he said back to me. He said, big project, little project, same work.
Yeah.
And that we've had conversations about that. So tell us a little bit about that focus for you and give us some ideas of what you mean when you say you're going to focus on, you're taking a slightly different focus in 2020, but give us some ideas.
So, firstly, let me just pre-frame this as well.
Yeah.
When you're starting out in property, yeah, you're always going to make mistakes on your first few deals. Even if you've been on the programs and you've got the training, you're going to make mistakes. It's going to be mistakes with the decor. It's going to be mistakes with the builders, with the tenants, with the agreements. And it might not be mistakes that are going to cripple you, but you're going to make mistakes. So it makes sense when you're starting out to start with smaller deals. So maybe get a single leg, get a bit of landlord experience, then get a couple of HMOs, maybe then buy a property and refurb it, and then maybe take a pub and turn it into flats. But start small, because you're going to make mistakes. It's better to make mistakes on a small deal for a £100,000 house than to make mistakes on a £100 million house.
And I'd like to jump in there quickly. I look back at that time where I didn't tick along really early in my property journey at the 50K deals, the 30K deals, yeah. I look back and I wish I had.
Yeah.
Because at the time, you know, that smaller cash flow, you know, but I didn't, I look back now and I go, oh man, I should have ticked along. Yeah. And I was looking at the bigger deals already when I should have just ticked along.
Yes.
So that's one of my regrets. Right. But so I'll preframe it with that. So
when I looked at my 2019 spreadsheets of how much money that I'd made from my property business, because I don't, as you know, I don't take a salary from my training business. That's mission. So my property business, I was thinking, it's like the 80-20 rule. 80% of the money has come from 20% of my properties that I've bought. And those 20% of the properties that I've bought have been big deals. Now, the interesting thing is this. 80% of the workload had come from it's just like
small deals.
From the small deals. So I'd spent so much more time and energy on the small deals, but then I'd made so much more money on the big deals. And I think the reason was as well, because when you start valuing your time a lot, when you're doing a small deal, the solicitor process, signing the paperwork, like I can't even be bothered to sign the paperwork and talk to the solicitor and talk to the mortgage broker and talk to the estate agent. And for a house that's £100,000, it's like, well, if I'm actually going to bill through the business my hourly rate, it makes the project suddenly so much less, but the profit so much less.
Yeah.
Whereas on the big projects, I can afford, because the money is so much better, I can afford to pay absolute experts and specialists. Like we've got a guy, Ben, who's on six-figure salary, plus he's also a partner in MacLeods, which is our construction company. So with Ben, I'm thinking, I can't ask Ben to go and do stuff on the small deals because I can't afford for Ben to do it.
The time to reward ratio is not justified.
Right, so if I can't afford to get these A players like Ben and some of my team to deal with the little stuff, who's going to deal with the little stuff? My wife, maybe me. And it just got to the point where I spoke to Grant Cardone. I've got to credit Grant Cardone, because when I met him last year in July, and we've got several meetings booked as well, he just said to me, dude, you're playing too small of a game. Mm. And I think the reason that happened was because these little small deals and even the HMOs and these properties, because they were working so well for me and I was making money off them, they were going up in value, I became financially free off them, I was thinking, well, this has always worked for me, so I'm just going to stick to what I know works. But then actually, if I want to be a billionaire, if I want to impact a billion people, it just makes sense to play a bigger game. So now I'm doing big deals. I was also lending money to people. I was like giving I was giving money to people. Like I gave out over £1 million just last year to my students and some of my colleagues, just in hard cash, just for them to invest. And I took a fixed return on investment of about 15-16%. And I was like, oh wow, there's no work for me. But actually, it's no work for me anyway, because I've got such good systems and such a good team. Why not invest it properly myself? Stop being lazy, stop being apathetic, stop being complacent, think bigger. And if I'm making so much money on these big deals now, why not push the boat a little bit more? So I still love the small deals. I'm still gonna.
Also, context: you've been doing property for over 10 years, or 10 years now.
Yeah.
So, like, for anyone watching this, you know that's where you grew into a massively successful property entrepreneur. Was the bread and butter stuff you're talking about now? All the small deals, and all things for 10 years.
And I would never poo-poo it. I would never say, "Oh, don't do that." No,
I wish I'd done more of that in the beginning phases.
Yes.
I probably got a bit blindsided by the bigger deals. But I could have ticked along at a point in my career. It's kind of the question, the it's both, you know?
Keeping
an eye on both.
Listen, if you've got £20,000 in the bank and you're working 9 to 5 and you want to become financially free, then that's one thing. But if you've got £500,000 and you want to create massive wealth, then maybe look at doing big deals.
Yeah, got it. I was recently introduced to a concept and it kind of shook me when I heard it for the first time, and someone was like, first of all, we all know the concept of what got you here is not going to get you there. So ticking over with that, and there's a time and place to be consistent and keep on doing the thing you're doing. But someone said this to me. He said, Ryan, sometimes your key to success is to stop trying harder. And I took a second to think about it. He's like, sometimes the thing you can only try harder at a thing. Sometimes the model that you're trying harder for your next steps is maybe got its limits. So simply trying harder at the thing you've been doing for the last whatever will only take you so far. Sometimes about changing up your strategy a little bit, not just trying harder at something, changing it up completely. And I was like, stop trying harder all the time. It's like a bit of you working so hard on that hamster wheel, you know?
Here's the thing, right? What will make you financially free will not make you a millionaire.
Got it.
What will make you a millionaire will not make you a billionaire. So you want to become financially free, there's a set of rules that you have to follow. And then once you've done that, you need to learn some new rules to be a millionaire. And then once you've learned that, you need to learn some new rules to be a billionaire. Now, I'm at the latter stage. I became financially free by 21. I became a millionaire by 25. Now I'm 28, 29 in a few months. Now I'm like, I want to be a billionaire by the time I'm 40. Now, is it going to happen? I can't say for sure. Am I going to make mistakes with the big deals? I can't. Of course. But that's where I am. That's my game right now.
Nice. I love it. I love that you said there's a set of rules to become financially free. There's a set of rules to become a millionaire. I think sometimes people overcomplicate that and they think, like, you hear the set of rules from a trusted source and then people try to overcomplicate it. And that, you know, I love the saying, you can be right or you can be rich. You can't be both.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, when you know what it's like to be in the training world where there's a set of rules that work for you, just do the thing that works as opposed to recreate the wheel all the time. So tell me about your influences now for your next steps to become a billionaire, which you've been very open about. So you've put it out into the universe.
Yeah.
What are some, I don't know, whether it's people you have to follow or steps you have to take? I know you've mentioned a few now. Is there any other guidance you can give?
Yeah, for sure. Well, after last year, spending time with Robert Kiyosaki, Grant Cardone, some of these super wealthy people, what I realized was that they all use other people's money.
Got it.
They all leverage other people's money. It was something that I've always been a little bit uncomfortable with in the past because I kind of thought, well, I don't want to use other people's money because I've got my own. But actually, what about both? And what got me started in the first place and how I started out was by using 20 grand from my grandma, right? So why now would I be like, oh no, I don't want to do that anymore? And also, when there's people in Singapore with hundreds of millions of pounds and celebrities that have got millions of pounds that don't really know what to do with it and are saying to me, hey Samuel, have you got any ideas? Before, I would say to them, yeah, come on the crash course. But not being funny, but some of these multimillionaires, celebrities that they might not have the time. You know, I've been working with a lot of premier footballers. I've just been on the phone yesterday to someone who a star premier football player, multimillionaire. Like, for him coming to a crash course, I used to be like, what's the problem, man? Just get down. You need to do whatever it takes. But now I'm thinking, maybe I need to be able to find a way of also helping those people. There's so many footballers who are multimillionaires who are 22 who are blowing all of their money, who could any minute have an injury, and then suddenly they'll be pushing boxes in Sainsbury's with depression. Like, if I know how to help them out, and also it's going to help get me to a billionaire. Zig Ziglar says, help other people get what they want, you'll get what you want. So now what I'm doing is I'm partnering, I'm joint venturing, and I'm letting them invest in the big deals, which is also scaling my net worth up as well. Cool. And I think that's something that Grant Cardone, Robert Kiyosaki, all of these guys do. And now I'm thinking, well, if I want to stay a millionaire, then fine. But if I want to become a billionaire, I need to start doing this. I need to, because if you want to make a £1 billion, you've got to impact a billion people. You've got to help more people. So I think it's just opening up more doors, helping more different types of people. So yeah, man.
Because I know you've had these opportunities flowing your way for a while.
Years.
But what was the shift for you? The shift was for you to the play a bigger game is that you had to say yes to some of these opportunities.
I think it was also as well that, I mean, the fact that I've been doing big deals for the last couple of years now myself, like, I might not have been ready for it a few years ago. Now I'm in a position where I've got full-time chartered surveyors, valuers, cost managers, builders, project managers.
In your team.
Yeah.
Not subcontracted. You've really got your power team.
No one's got a better power team in property than me right now in the UK.
Yeah.
No one's got better connections than me right now in the UK. Yeah. So I've got that. in one way. And when people say to me as well now, like, Samuel, who's your solicitor? Who's your, it's a bit difficult, because before I just go, yeah, man, this is my solicitor, this is my broker. But now I'm thinking, now I've got different set of team. They'll charge you £1,000 an hour. You don't want to use them. And I'll recommend different types of people. Because when I was growing up and I was doing deals, I was finding people from BNI, I was networking, I was getting people, you know, small teams. Now I'm working with big companies and organizations. So when I get someone that's buying their first deal that says, you know, oh, Samuel, who do you use for your bro? It's like, yeah, this is a different game right now. Mm. So now I've created this big power team for big deals. To not let other people tap into that would be a shame.
Awesome. Listen, we're at the beginning of a decade.
Yeah.
We just finished the decade. Been a good decade for you.
Yeah, massive, yeah.
10 years in property. If you had said to yourself 10 years ago that you'd be where you are right now, what would you have said to yourself?
I don't think I would have believed it.
Cool. So now I'll take that into the next 10 years. Where would you like to be in 10 years' time?
Well, I want to be a billionaire by the time I'm 40. I'm now 29 soon. So by 2030, I want to be pushing a billionaire. I also want to be... And the thing is, some people might say, why do you want to be a billionaire? Mm. I remember when I started out, you say 10 years ago. Mm. 10 years ago, I was 19. All I wanted was financial freedom. Mm. If you said to me 10 years ago, do you want to be a millionaire? I'd have been like, no, I don't want to be a millionaire. I just want to be financially free. Mm. But then when I became financially free, I wanted to be a millionaire. Why? Because I wanted to push myself, not because I wanted the £1 million in my bank, but because of who I knew that I would become in being able to make £1 million.
Got it.
The exact same thing is going on now, man.
Yeah.
I want to be a billionaire, not because I don't want to look at however many zeros in a bank. I'm not interested in that. What I want is I want to become the kind of person that can add that much value to society and to the planet that I deserve to be a billionaire. If you gave me £1 billion now from the lottery, you would actually, it would be almost like me looking at Everest and going, oh man, I can't wait to climb it. Come on, let's go team. And then someone just skipping me up on a zip wire or a helicopter. I would feel cheated if you gave me a bit. I don't want anyone to give me £1 billion. I want to earn it and I want to become someone that can manage it.
Yeah, I understand. It's interesting. You know, that concept of becoming that person over time has been a huge influence on my not only my property journey, but my business journey. Is I truly believe that business is the greatest personal development program of all time.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you can have so many challenges within business. It doesn't matter when. It's when it happens, not if. And through those challenges, you learn so much about yourself.
Yeah.
So if that is your next 10 years and your lessons from the last 10 years, my wife and I every single December sit down and we look back at the previous year and go, what were our wins? What were some of our unexpected wins? What would we like to do more of in the next year or less of in the next year? Mm. If I had to say to you on the last decade, what are some of the things you should do less of in the next decade to achieve your goals or more of in the next decade to achieve your goals based on your previous decade, what would you say?
Okay, so the next decade, I think I want to spend a bit more time with my wife mm. and with my kids. I know that they're both young. I've been married now 5 years, but I think that's something that's really important because, as you said a bit earlier, when you have time on holiday vacation, you actually do come up with genius ideas. Mm. So rather than working hard, I want to work really smart. I want to be over the next decade. I'm going to be way more open to collaboration ideas. Okay. I was a little bit of like a lone ranger. The last decade, I've been doing kind of a lot of stuff myself. Now I'm much more open to collaborations, more open-minded, rather than just like, this is my thing and I am doing this and I'm doing it all alone. It's like, nah, man, I'm open. I'm going to be smart. I'm going to be spending time with my family more. I also watched even this year, not this decade, this year, I'm going to get in shape because I think that, okay, right now I'm young, I'm 28. I have a lot of energy and people say that to me, you've got so much energy. When I'm 40, I want to have the same energy. And I know that if I am not in good shape, there's going to come a time where it's going to be like, actually, I don't have the same energy I used to have. So I want to continue to have the same energy. So this year I'm going to get in shape and I've hired a full-time personal trainer that literally just travels with me, trains me, feeds me, helps, you know, just holds me to account. Environment is stronger than willpower, as you always say. And having Marvin, who's my PT, who's awesome. He's got like his own TV channel on Sky One. He's almost like a bit of a celebrity in the fitness space. Having him with me just always constantly with me. I mean, he's not with me 24/7, but he's, I see him all the time. Having that environment is amazing. So we've literally just got started this month and I'm loving it. So I'm excited about my health. I'm excited about my family. I'm excited about becoming a billionaire. I'm excited about inspiring and helping a lot of people to make money. And I'm also excited about collaborating with people and just having fun.
Awesome. It's probably a bit of a lesson for me, that what you've just said, because there was once an article that Arianna Huffington wrote, and she said there's kind of five things. There's family, friends, business, health, and sleep. And she said, choose three. And you can normally do three very, very well, and there's going to be some level of compromise in the other two. So let's give you an example. If you're going to go push hard with business, you're going to spend time with your family, and for instance, you want to exercise, you're probably going to have to compromise a little bit on sleep, and you may not see your friends as much as you want, you know? Yeah. But I've been saying that so often that I actually thought to myself the other day, I wonder if it's not becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. In that, like, why can't I have all five?
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, why can't I have all five? And I've been, it's just the other day I said to myself, well, if I keep on saying that I can only have three of the five.
Which were the three that you thought you were having?
I always thought that business, yeah. Obviously I love business, I love doing what I'm doing, family, and in some way, shape, or form, I really like my sleep. So I was like, in some way, shape, or form, I have to choose between sleep and exercise.
Yeah.
That was kind of my big compromise. I've got a young baby now, so it's a bit different.
But you know, when
those are my ones I battle with.
It's funny, because when I met you, when we spent some time together training, I was jealous of your fitness. I remember you took your top off at the Train the Trainer program, and I was like, damn. Like, hit your energy. And I came up to you and I said, like, dude, what do you eat, man? Like... But for me, it's always been a bit of an excuse, exact same reason. I've always thought, I'm so good in business.
Yeah.
And for me, the five things would also be different. I'd also include faith in there as well.
Yeah.
I think that it's really important to be close, connected to God. For me, that's a really important thing. I know it's for you.
Yeah, we've actually spoken about that with a lot of my travel I used to do was on Sundays. And and it was a challenge for me. As we say, environment is stronger than willpower. Even that journey for me, being at home on Sundays was a big part of my priorities. Because I got to grow closer to my faith because of that, you know. Yeah. I know it doesn't have to be that way, but just for me, that was a help.
Yeah, so I think for me, I've always said, my faith is strong, my relationship with my family is good, my money is good and business is good, yeah. My significance and my recreational, my mission is good, my health and fitness and food and stuff, that's not too good, but hey, at least everything else is good, you know. But I don't believe that anymore. Now I think you can literally have it all, because I see other people making the excuses and they're saying, well... I've got a good relationship with my family and I enjoy this and all that, but yeah, my money's not too good. But you know what? It doesn't matter, because I'd rather be happy. I'm like,
why either or, yeah.
You'd have to say I'd rather be happy than have money. Have both.
I always say that you should be... I'm always very wary of someone that talks too much about balance and or quality of life. And I'll tell you why. It's normally on the... I believe those things are important, but often the message is coming from a messenger that's often trying to justify their current lot.
Yeah.
So often they will justify, let's say, their financial position by saying, well, I just like to focus on quality of life, not money.
Yeah.
Or I like to focus on balance, not money. It's the same thing as saying, well, why can't you have, if you're going to work hard anyway,
yeah.
Why can't you have both?
Oh, so, I totally agree. I don't believe in work-life balance. I think that working for me is life. When I'm working, I feel alive.
Yeah, I don't understand how you can make the distinction, like where you can just turn it off.
No. What are you saying? You're saying work-life balance. Well, when I'm working, I'm not really living.
Yeah.
Do you work to live or do you live to work? Oh, God, it's a stupid question.
I'm excited about work. Like, my wife always jokes, if I'm reading a book, she, by extension, reads the whole book with me, because every single day at the dinner table, and people like, don't talk about business at the dinner table. But like, for me, I'm just talking about my exciting lesson I learned in the book,
yeah.
Which is a life lesson most of the time, not a business lesson. I'll be like, oh, you baby won't believe what I learned today in this book. My wife always jokes and says she's read all the books with me.
Yes.
Because I'm just excited about it. It's not that I'm bringing work into personal life. It's just I'm excited about, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, listen, I'm excited for 2020. I'm excited to impact a lot of lives. And I think, you know, there's already so many people doing well in property. I think that 2020 is going to be a really decisive year for not only us personally, but also by extension of that, I truly believe that there's one of my greatest books I've ever read is a book called by the name of Lead the Field by Earl Nightingale. And he said, the person that makes the most money is simply the person that serves the most. And I'm really excited to be on that journey with you and to have seen how focused you are on serving first. And I have to really commend you here. One of the big focuses for me in 2020 when it comes to business has been, actually just did a podcast on this myself, was how content and information is really the gateway, if you will, towards helping people grow and putting as much as that out on the internet for free. And I just want to commend you for the lives you've changed just by doing that, man. I don't know anyone that invests the amount of money that you do and the time you do and et cetera into doing what we're doing now and changing people's lives with that. So I look forward to an amazing 2020, man.
Thanks, man. And also yourself, you know, you are a massive inspiration to me, a great friend. If people want to check you out as well, you even speak at and run a lot of the crash courses with me, alongside me. And also you're even running one this weekend on your own, which is epic.
This weekend we've got 750 people coming down to Ibis.
I'll be there, but I'll be in the audience watching.
Nice.
So people will be like, I'm coming to the Property Investors Crash Course by Samuel Leeds is going to be sat in the audience with me. But do you know what, there's very few people on the planet that I would let teach my programs like that. But not only have you been there, done it, got the t-shirt, you're a multimillionaire, you know property really well, you're also an amazing communicator, but you've got the same mission that I have. So if people are listening to this and they want to see more of Ryan, they want to see more of me, get down booked onto the Property Investors Crash Course.
Awesome. See you guys soon. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll do a lot more of these in the future.